Hello, everyone. Today is Saturday, March 23rd. I'm Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports, and our broadcast will pretty much cover basketball, the NCAA tournament, men and women. And at the end of the broadcast, I'll have one baseball story on the Red Sox. So we'll start with the game yesterday. The UConn men didn't take Stetson lightly, and they didn't take the Hatters down lightly either. Friday's 91-52 win in Brooklyn's Barclays Center marked UConn's widest margin of victory in an NCAA tournament game since beating 16th seed Chattanooga 103-47 in the first round of its 2009 Final Four run. The number one overall seed Huskies scored the game's first 8 points and ran out to a 23-4 lead through the first 10 minutes, overpowering the 16 seed Hatters in every facet. The lead grew to as many as 36 with just over 3 minutes left in the first half after All-American point guard Newton lobbed his fourth alley-oop of the game, this time to Samson Johnson for the slam. That's exactly how you want to start a game like this, Coach Dan Hurley said. You're in March Madness. You know the history of these number ones or high seeds, and we just took away all hope in the game and from them early on with the defense, with the offense, and with relentlessness. That was a pretty good first performance. UConn went into halftime ahead 52-19, which marked the program's largest halftime lead, 33 points, in its NCAA tournament history. Noon finished with 13 points and 8 assists. As Hurley emptied the bench with 4 minutes left, all starters scoring in double figures. Donovan Klingon dominated inside with 19 points, 9 for 11 from the field, and 8 rebounds. Cam Spencer scored 13 of his 15 points in the first half, and Alex Carabin finished with 12, 9 in the first half. Stephon Castle added 14 with 5 rebounds and 4 assists. We're really just trying to stay hungry, Klingon said. No matter how many games we've won, it's March, we're 1-0 now. You don't think about the regular season. You don't think about anything else. You just think about what's in front of you. UConn, beginning its bid for back-to-back national titles, shot 22 for 32 from the field and 7 for 14 from three-point range in the opening period. Stetson, making its first tournament appearance, was just 8 for 26 in the first half and 1 for 10 from beyond the arc. The Hatters made a run early in the second half, 14-3 over 3:35 and cut the deficit to 25. But UConn returned to form defensively, held them without a made field goal for more than 4 minutes. It all started in preparation, which the Huskies do extensively, and the same way for every opponent, no matter its resume. Hurley, who admitted he felt nervous with the amount of expectations on the Huskies, not wanting to blow the success of the last 2 years by becoming the latest number one seed to go down, was worried about the Hatters' shooting ability. They ranked number 28 in three-point percentage entering the tournament and number 34 in three-pointers per game, but shot just 3 for 19 from deep and 31% from the field. On Friday, UConn finished 53% from the field and 9 for 24 from beyond the arc. If you don't show up and do your job and execute at a high level, then anyone can be beaten, Spencer said. You've got to bring your A game against every team and respect everybody the same way like you're trying to win a championship. We've had a week in between games, so we were just kind of ready to get after it. Watching all the other games, we were just fired up to get on the court. Winning a game in March Madness is hard. It doesn't matter who you're playing. Winning in general is hard, Carabin said. UConn is 20-4 in NCAA first-round games. Since seeding began in 1979, the Huskies will meet ninth seed Northwestern in the round of 32 on Sunday at a time still to be announced. The Wildcats advanced after beating Florida Atlantic, a Final Four team last season, 77-65, in overtime behind a combined 49 points from guards Ryan Langborg and Boo Buey. And I'm going to read the highlights of that Northwestern game. Then I have another UConn men note to read. We'll do the Northwestern 77, Florida Atlantic 65. That went into overtime. Ryan Lambert scored 12 of his career-high 27 points in overtime, and ninth-seeded Northwestern finally put away number 8-seed Florida Atlantic 77-65 on Friday in the first round of the NCAA tournament. The injury-depleted Wildcats recovered after squandering a 9-point lead late in the second half. Brooks Barnheiser's driving layup tied it with 9 seconds left. Next up for Northwestern, 22-11, is number one overall seed UConn in the second round of the East Region on Sunday in Brooklyn. The Big Ten program has won a game in each of its 3 trips to the NCAA tournament, but has never reached the Sweet 16. This team has so much heart, Coach Chris Collins said. We've been thrown so many curveballs with injuries, disruptions, and they just refuse to let that be the narrative. Boo Buey, the leading scorer in school history, had 19 of his 22 points after a quiet first half. Barnheiser added 13 points and 10 rebounds for Northwestern, which advanced in the NCAAs for the second consecutive year, despite playing without injured starters Ty Berry with a knee injury and 7-footer Matthew Nicholson with a leg, who are both finished for the season. They played really well in overtime, FAU coach Dusty May said. We just looked like we were a little bit out of gas, I guess. Lad Golden had 19 points and 9 rebounds for the Owls, who ended up 25-9, who returned nearly their entire team from a surprising Final Four run last year, but were unable to muster that same March magic this time. They certainly tried, though. Down by 9 with 6.5 minutes left, Florida Atlantic scored 8 straight points to grab a 58-56 lead on Jonell Davis's driving basket with 1:04 remaining, his first points of the second half. Now back to UConn men. Here are some notes. The first talking point of the NCAA tournament is the end of the one-and-done era. John Calipari, who rebuilt the Kentucky Empire with 5-star freshmen, hasn't won at all since 2012, and on Thursday was stunned by Oakland in the first round. The era of taking these young freshmen and trying to play against older players is over, former Villanova coach Jay Wright said during the CBS telecast. Name, imagine, likeness has players staying in college longer. The extra year due to COVID has some players staying until age 24. But UConn, which has had only one and done in its history, Andre Drummond in 2011-12, is expected to have another in Stephen Castle. The Huskies are 32-3, the defending champs and top overall seed in the tournament. Castle is surrounded by older players. Cam Spencer will turn 24 on April 6th. Hassan Diarra is 23. Tristan Newton, a fifth-year player, turns 23 in April. So Dan Hurley's approach to program building is becoming a desirable blueprint. Number one, you've got to insulate big-time freshmen like Steph Castle around the core of returners to your program every year, Hurley said, after UConn's 91-52 win over Stetson in the first round, and then supplement with the transfer portal. So you can't miss on high school kids. You can't miss on player development. I think you've got to do it in a strategic way. And Jalen Stewart is another freshman that right now is helping us as a freshman, but has a chance to be a star as a sophomore. So I just think there's a timing and planning that comes the way that you construct and architect your roster. And it's got to be a mix of portal, high school players, insulated by also a core of returners to your program. UConn led 52-19 and became just the third team in 20 years to lead an NCAA game by at least 30 at the half in the last 20 years. Nevertheless, Hurley told CBS reporter Tracy Wolfson as he walked off the court, everything should be automatic this time of year and just defensively. It's human nature, I guess, but just to throttle down right there like that late, that's not championship level, he said. Stetson closed the half with 4 consecutive makes, slimming down what was once a 36-point UConn advantage. 9 different players scored in the first half for UConn. UConn has now won its last 7 NCAA tournament games by double digits, the 5th time in tournament history that has happened. The record in this area is 9 by Michigan State from 2000 to 2001. With FAU's loss to Northwestern, former Husky Jalen Gaffney played his 159th and final college game. Now, I'm going to give you some other scores of the games that made the paper. Let's start. These are all the men. I'm doing the men first on a lot of information on the women. This is the Marquette-Western Kentucky game from Indianapolis. Cam Jones and Marquette kept pushing the ball up the floor, and eventually the shot started to fall. Having Tyler Kolek back definitely helped. Jones scored 28 points, and Kolek made a successful return from an oblique injury, helping number 2 seed Marquette rally for an 87-69 victory over number 15 seed Western Kentucky in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Friday. The Golden Eagles, 26-9, trailed 43-36 at halftime, but they overwhelmed the Hilltoppers in the second half. They used a 15-2 run to open a 87-67 cushion on the way to their second consecutive first-round victory in the NCAA tournament. After a mistake-prone start featuring 8 turnovers and 39% shooting, Marquette went 20 for 36 from the field in the final 20 minutes and committed just 2 more turnovers. The Golden Eagles also clamped down defensively on the Hilltoppers. That was happening in the first half because they were more aggressive than us, Jones said. Coach Shaka Smart told us before the second half that the more aggressive team is going to win the game, and we really wanted to come out and be aggressive on defense. That opened up a lot of stuff on offense. Jones scored 18 in the second half. Kolek had 18 points and 11 assists, matching Dwayne Wade's school record for assists in an NCAA tournament game in his first game since February 28th. He had 10 assists in the second half. Once I hit the floor, there were some obvious jitters because they haven't played in 3 weeks, Kolek said. But I think 37 minutes, most minutes in a game, I thought I did all right with the win. Marquette is going for the program's first Sweet 16 berth since 2013 after losing in the second round last year as a number 2 seed. Tyrone Marshall scored a career-high 21 points for WKU, 23-12, which sees momentum from Marquette midway through the first half in its first NCAA appearance since 2013. But WKU shot 33.3%, 11 for 33 from the field in the second half. We gave them some open looks where we weren't connected enough defensively with our communication, and they got going, first-year WKU coach Steve Lutz said. When they get going, they're hard to stop. And I have another story, this one on the San Diego State UAB game. Within the first 5 minutes, Jaden Lide scored at the rim, hit a mid-range jumper, threw down a powerful dunk, and knocked down a three-pointer. And this was bound to be a big game for Lide, and the San Diego State needed everything the third-team AP All-American had to offer. Lide dominated inside on the way to 32 points. Lamont Butler added 15, and number 5 seed San Diego held off 12th seed UAB 69-65 on Friday in the first round of the NCAA tournament. He's hard to guard, San Diego State coach Brian Dutcher said of his 6'9", 240-pound forward. He puts a lot of fouls on people. We find him, and to his credit, he plays unselfishly. He moves the ball easily, but when his time comes, he was ready for it. A year after marching to the national title game, also as a number 5 seed, the Aztecs saw a 12-point second-half lead disappear before putting together a late surge behind Lede to avoid a March Madness surprise in the East region. They don't give out those All-American accolades just on a whim. You have to earn those, UAB coach Andy Kennedy said of Lede. And I'm just going to give you a couple other scores here in the West region. Clemson, 77. New Mexico, 56. Baylor, 92. Colgate, 67. From Spokane, Washington, John Polakaitis scored 28 points. Samson Ellington made a key block during a wild scramble in the final seconds, and 13-seeded Yale rallied in the final minutes to take down number 4 seed Auburn 78-76 in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Friday. For the second straight year, the Ivy League tournament champion took down one of the pre-tournament favorites, busting plenty of March Madness brackets once again. Last year it was Princeton toppling Arizona. This time it was Yale's turn. The Bulldogs, 23-9, won an NCAA tournament game for just the second time in school history, rallying from a 10-point deficit midway through the second half. After the final seconds ticked off, the players celebrated on the scorer's table in front of their fans. Yale will face number 5 seed San Diego State in the second round on Sunday. A win there and a UConn win against Northwestern would match the two Connecticut teams in a Sweet 16 matchup next weekend in Boston. Pulokitis hit big shot after big shot. His step-back three-pointer with 2:10 left in the game gave the Bulldogs a 73-72 lead. Yale never trailed again despite a chaotic final stretch that included Auburn getting off two shots in the closing seconds off two shots following a missed free throw, one of which was rejected by Allerton. Auburn's KD Johnson had a contested look for a winning three-pointer at the buzzer that was offline. Joni Broome led Auburn 27-8 with 24 points and 13 rebounds, but was crumpled on the court after the loss. It looked as if he might have injured his right knee in the final scrum. Auburn rolled through the SEC tournament last week and became a favorite pick as a team that could take down number 1 overall seed UConn should the pair end up clashing in the Sweet 16. But the Tigers failed to get out the first round and joined fellow SEC schools South Carolina, Kentucky, Florida, and Mississippi State amid the early departures from March Madness. And as I mentioned, up next on Sunday, Yale will be playing San Diego State. Now we will go to the women. UConn women's basketball coach Gino Auriemma has been through enough NCAA tournaments in his 39 seasons to recognize a challenge when he sees one. For his number 3 seed Huskies, he knows that 14 seed Jackson State will be anything but an easy out in the first round. This is the reason you want to be a number 1 seed so you don't get this matchup in the first round, Auriemma said. I always say later in the season that I don't care what seed we are, we just want to get in. Well, that's a bunch of crap because you're trying to avoid this game in the first round because they're good. They're depth, they rebound the ball hard, they get it out in transition. They're undefeated in their league for a reason. UConn enters the tournament ranked lower than a number 2 for the first time since 2008, despite an undefeated record in the Big East and a 4th straight conference tournament champion. All 5 of the Huskies' losses came against teams currently ranked in the top 11 nationally, and they dominated the Big East tournament with 3 straight victories by at least 25 points. The Huskies, 25-5, host the Tigers, 26-6, at Gamble Pavilion on Saturday, 1 p.m. on ABC. Though not at the same level of competition, Jackson State's record is remarkably similar to UConn's. The Tigers also went undefeated in their conference and routed Alcorn State 68-44 in the SWAC Tournament Championship for the 3rd time in 5 years under head coach Tamika Reed. Reed also put her squad through the ringer early in the season with the 3rd hardest non-conference schedule in the country behind only UConn and SWAC rival Southern. Half of their 6 losses came against top 16 teams in the NCAA tournament seeding, and all were Power 5 teams. We thought we could do a better job against those teams, but early on we struggled with our chemistry. We struggled with players accepting a new role, but it helped us identify who we are and what we're capable of, Reed said. Going into the conference play, we were able to build from that, and the players have enough pride and understanding to know that we are the bar in the SWAC. So our non-conference schedule prepared us for this, and we are just hoping that it carries over into our game versus UConn. And I'm going to stop there because I have another UConn women's story. Over the next few days, Aliyah Edwards will play for the last time at Gamble Pavilion. Edwards, a senior, announced Thursday on social media that she will be leaving UConn after this season, declaring her intention to enter the WNBA draft. 3rd-seeded UConn, 29-5, will face number 14 Jackson State, 26-6, in the first round of the NCAA tournament in front of a sellout crowd at Gamble Saturday at 1 p.m. Edwards, who broke her nose when she was elbowed by a Providence player in the Big East quarterfinal game March 9th, missed the Big East tournament semifinal and championship games, but she will be back Saturday wearing a mask that she wore much of last year after breaking her nose in practice. "I think I'm going to feel a lot more love than I usually do in Gamble," she said Friday. "I've been playing in Gamble for a while now, so I feel like the crowd is going to cheer a bit louder. As long as they're cheering for UConn, that's all I can ask for, and it's going to feel special, but I just want to stay present and stay in the moment." Edwards, who had another year of eligibility, said it was difficult to make the decision for her to go to the pros, she said she told Auriemma after the Big East tournament. "Oh my gosh, if it was easy, I would have made the decision at the start of the season," she said. "Everyone can see how special this team is, but behind the scenes, they're even more special to me. But I don't want to take away from what we have left to do. It's a celebration. So I try to emphasize just how great this program has treated me, how great my teammates and coach have treated me, and how special this family is to me. And I want to keep it that way. But we're not done yet. We still have a lot of games to play, and we're still trying to achieve our goal." Edwards is the second leading scorer on the team, averaging 17.8 points and 9.3 rebounds. She is 22 rebounds short of 1,000 for her career. And in the last 10 games, she averaged 19.5 points and 11.5 rebounds with 7 double-doubles. Fellow senior Nika Mule had previously announced she would not be returning to UConn. Teammates Paige Beckers and Aubrey Griffin announced on senior night they're coming back. Mule from Croatia and Edwards from Canada do not have the same opportunities to earn name, image, likeness, income in college as their U.S. counterparts. UConn coach Jeannie Auriemma had said Monday that he expected Edwards to leave, although he did not reveal her decision. "There's only been actually two conversations that I've had with Aliyah about this," Auriemma said Friday. "One was a while back when it was brought to my attention that she might consider coming back, so I talked to her about it and gave her all the pros and cons, and at the end of the day, I said it's going to be your comfort level, and whichever way you go, obviously, we'll be fine with it. But I always thought it was a real, real long shot because I think there is a cycle in college basketball. You spend 4 years someplace, you pretty much pour everything you have into it, and then it's time to move on and go to the next phase of your life." Nika's reason for doing it may have been different than Elias. I don't think Nika is going to be a top 5, 6, or 7 WNBA draft pick, so her reasons may be different for going, and Paige's situation is different for staying. Edwards said she was doing well physically. "The mask is going to make an appearance again," she said, "but I've worn it before, so I'm more used to it now. But yeah, I'm not going to let it distract me or anything like that." Becker said she was partly sad and partly proud of what Edwards was able to accomplish at UConn. "I'm just trying to embrace the rest of the time that we have left and not even think about the fact that Mule and Edwards are both leaving," she said. And I want to just read some college women's notes. Fairfield University announced Thursday that women's basketball coach Carly Thibault-Donis, has signed a contract extension designed to keep her at the mid-major through the 2029-30 season. Terms of the deal were not released. Thibault-Donis is just in her second year at Fairfield. She guided the number 25 Sags to a 31-1 record in the 2024 MAAC Championship. Number 13 seed Fairfield will bring a 29-game winning streak into their game Saturday with number 4 seed Indiana, who is 24-5 in Bloomington. "This place is incredibly special, starting with their passionate, caring, and driven people that come together to strive for excellence," Thibault-Donis said in a statement. "This can be and is becoming one of the elite women's basketball schools in the country, and we've been able to prove that to be true in the last few years." And let's see, I'm just going to give you a couple notes here on the South Carolina game. This is women. Chloe Kitts tied her career high with 21 points on 9 of 9 shooting. His number 1 overall seed South Carolina easily overcame the absence of starters Camilla Cardozo and Bree Hall to beat number 16 seed Presbyterian 91-39 in the first round of the women's NCAA tournament on Friday. The Gamecocks, 33-0, moved 5 wins away from the 10th perfect championship season by overwhelming the Blue Hose 21-15 of the Big South Conference for a second time this season. Next comes another rematch against number 8 seed North Carolina on Sunday. The Tar Heels gave up almost all of a 16-point lead before holding on to defeat number 9 seed Michigan State earlier on Friday. And before we get to that baseball story, I'm going to tell you what's on the air today. And there's just too many games. I can't read them all these tournaments. But the NIT tournament, 11:30 a.m., North Texas at Seton Hall. That's the second round on ESPN2. And I'm just going to go through some of the other tournaments. The Gonzaga versus Kansas, second round CBS. That's at 3:15. Michigan State versus North Carolina, second round, 5:30 p.m. NCAA, that's in CBS. This next one is on TNT. Washington State versus Iowa State, that's the second round. And another NCAA tournament, Texas versus Tennessee, second round, CBS. 8:40 p.m. NCAA tournament, Duquesne versus Illinois, second round, TNT. And 9:40 p.m. NCAA tournament, Oregon versus Creighton, second round, TBS. And a lot of women, I can't go through them all, but there are quite a few women basketball games, and most of them are all on ESPN or ESPNU. And, of course, the one we're going to be keen in on is the Jackson State at UConn first round. That's on ABC. Now, over to the NBA, Brooklyn at New York. That's on MSG and also on ES at 1 p.m. and Boston at Chicago on the new NBC Sports and NBA TV networks. That's at 8 p.m. In the NHL, 1 p.m. Boston at Philadelphia. That's on NESN and the NHL Network. And Florida at New York Rangers, ABC, 8 p.m. And in golf, 1 p.m. PGA Tour, the Valspar Championship third round on the Golf Channel. 3 p.m. PGA Tour, the Valspar Championship third round, NBC. 4 p.m. PGA Tour Champions, the Hoyt Classic second round on the Golf Channel. 7 p.m. LPGA Tour, the Fir Hill Surrey Park Championship third round, that's on the Golf Channel. And at 10 p.m. DP World Tour, the Porsche Singapore Classic final round on the Golf Channel. And I didn't leave much time to read the Red Sox story, but I'll do as much as I can before we have to sign off. Red Sox starting rotation is officially set. Red Sox manager Alex Cora announced Friday that Turner Houck and Garrett Whitlock have earned the last two spots in the starting rotation, joining Brian Bello, Nick Pivetta, and Cutter Crawford. Cooper Criswell, who was also competing for a rotation spot, will be optioned to AAA and remain stretched out as a starter. Houck and Whitlock have enjoyed strong performances this spring after being limited by injury throughout 2023. Houck has posted a 2.40 ERA over 15 innings with 16 strikeouts against only 3 walks while demonstrating notably improved velocity, and Whitlock has a 3.45 ERA over 15.2 Grapefruit League innings with 16 strikeouts and 2 walks. That doesn't include his recent 5 2/3 scoreless innings with 10 strikeouts in a recent minor league game. Houck, a former first-round pick, and Whitlock, one of the most successful Rule 5 picks in Red Sox history, have both long been viewed as future mainstays of the Red Sox rotation, but to this point haven't met those expectations. Houck has often struggled to pitch deep into games, and last season was limited by off-season back surgery before missing 2 months after being hit in the head by a line drive. Whitlock has been plagued by injury coming into last season, rehabbing his surgically repaired hip before spending 3 separate stints on the injured list, including twice due to a right elbow issue. And now the pair will get another chance to establish themselves as long-term rotation anchors. And one more note here, J.D. Martinez is joining the Mets. What this means for Mark Vientos is unclear. The Mets have been eager to see what they have in Vientos and Brent Brady, two homegrown third basemen who are going into their sophomore seasons. They made it clear this winter that the two would receive plenty of at-bats during the 2024 season and conducted the offseason in a way that backed up their statements. The plan was for Vientos to get most of his at-bats as a DH while getting some games at third base as well as Beatty. Now with Martinez, that kind of changes things, so we'll see what happens there. That's it for the sports for today. I am Bill Murphy. Thank you much for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. Please stay safe.